Brother Keeling and to all of you who are present, I am reminded now of a story I heard about Sam Jones. He had held about a 3 or 4 months meeting in the community, and a young preacher in his faith had heard all of his messages. Time come for him to leave, and he's going to take a train to Depot, not far from where he had held his camp meeting. This young preacher went to him and said to him, Brother Jones, I've heard all of your messages. I've taken notes, and I've loaded my gun from your messages. Jones said to him, young man, if I've helped you, I'm glad. Said, young in the ministry as you are, don't try to shoot my ammunition out of your little gun, it'll blow it all to pieces. So after what we have heard, my little gun may blow up. But with reference to one thing Brother Power said about the armor, put on the whole armor of God, not one piece of it for the back. Every bit of it's for the front. We're to face the enemy. And Brother Bean's message, a number of years ago, was a man, Brother Powers knows him, maybe some of you, Owen Nye at Goo. Been a farmer all of his life. Very great man, great Christian man. Had a pastor named Parnell. Parnell preached on the millennium. Brother Bean made me think of this. Parnell said he'll be growing corn and cotton and all of that in the millennium. Knight said he walked out on the outside, said, Lord, Lord, I'm disappointed. Says, I've slaved all of my life in the cotton fields. And I thought surely on the other side I'd get some relief, but the preacher said I'd still be growing cotton. I had one thought that, not to add anything to the brethren's messages, but to make a suggestion of a thing that I found might help a little somebody. About Gog and Magog. In the battle that's described in Ezekiel 38 and 39, Gog and Magog are mentioned. Then Gog and Magog are mentioned in Revelation chapter 20. And I wondered what the relationship could be. In Ezekiel 39 and verse 2, God told the powers that be in that battle, I'm going to leave 1/6 of you. 1/6 of Gog and Magog was left in that first battle. They had 1,000 years to increase, and that same Gog and Magog shows up in the end. I think developed out of that 1/6 that was left. They never did believe in Christ. One more thought. In the 13th chapter of Revelation, there we have set forth that the devil set up a trinity. The dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. And in the 19th chapter of Revelation, the beast and the false prophet are cast into the lake of fire. So he lost his Trinity. And in the 20th chapter of Revelation, the devil would have to go out by himself to deceive the people and to gather them to battle. I just add those as my thoughts concerning the great messages. And I mean it. We've heard great messages this morning. Now to my task. My plan is, I'll speak this morning, tonight, tomorrow morning, tomorrow night, if the Lord wills, on church history. If I speak on Sunday, I plan to preach. I'll try to get through with this history in these four lectures. Beginning with my thoughts this morning, I was dealing with heresy within the church and persecution on the outside of the church. And in order for me to cover the territory that I plan to cover, I'll have to just hit high places. And I maybe not present anything new to you. There's one other thing that's personal that I thought I'd mention. What Brother Powers said about the man being investigated as to whether they'd call him to go to his home. My counsel has been, when folks ask me, find out where the man preached last, and why he left, and where he preached before that, and where he left. As far as you can find out about him, how he's got along, where he's been, you can determine about what you may expect when he comes to you. I know we've had in our ranks two or three men, I'm not going to name them, but I know their names, that have been church splitters. Everywhere they'd go, they'd stay a while, and when they leave, the church was divided. And that sort of a man ought to be investigated fully, back to where he's been. I thought if I were investigated, somebody's come into the Pine Bluff Association to investigate me. I was born in the Pine Bluff Association. I live in 9 miles of where I was born, and I've never lived any further away from where I was born than the 9 miles. I've lived in that association all of my life. There's 20 of our churches in my county, and I've preached in all of them. I've pastored some of them. And I think the most gratifying thing as to my reputation that's personal to me is the fact that I've served the local association 25 consecutive years as moderator. And during those years, there was only two men ever nominated against me, and each one of them got 7 votes. And after I'd served 25 years, I said, don't elect me anymore, I won't serve. Somebody else needs the job and the honor. So I deem the fact that the folks that had known me all of my life, I'd lived with them all of my life, they knew me better than anybody else in the world, still had confidence enough in me that they'd trust me to a place of somewhat of leadership. Now, the heresies in the church grew, and there became factions in the church, even in the time of the apostles. Soon after them, the episcopacy began to be developed. There grew rebellions and factions. Ordinarily, there'd be a leader among the people who would be rebellious against some of the things that were going on in the churches. He'd take a stand against it. And he'd have some followers. And that happened again and again down through the ages. And the first of these divisions came, but I want to read a verse or two from Jude. The book of Jude, chapter, well, just one chapter, verses 3 and 4. Beloved, when I gave all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation, it was needful for me to write unto you and to exhort you that ye should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered to the saints. For there are certain men crept in unawares, who were before of old ordained to this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of God into lasciviousness, and denying the only Lord God and Savior Jesus Christ. There were heresies that developed, and I'm not going to go into a detail of these things. It'll take a lot of time. But in my judgment, Judaism was one of them. And then you take the seven letters to the seven churches of Asia. These were literal churches in that age. And the Lord judged them. I think perhaps they had a dispensational meaning, sort of what happened in one in a certain age of the world might be portrayed in what happened in that church. But they left their first love. And they were guilty of Jezebelism, and Baalism, a lot of these things that crept into the early churches. A man named Montanus rebelled against the conduct of being carried on in the churches. He had a group of folks that followed him, and these that followed him were called Montanists. Ordinarily, they were designated by the name of the leader. I thought about the controversy we had in our association a good many years ago. Dr. D.N. Jackson was the leader on one side and Dr. Bogard on the other side. And those of you that remember things back there, they were called Bogardites and Jacksonites. And that is the way it was back in this early history. The church had no name. I mentioned that in a previous discourse. Called Montanus. And I've examined the religions of the period in all of these groups were the names by which they were designated. Some of them had false. Some of them held the doctrines we don't hold to. But our people were identified with. And my idea in the next few lectures is to follow the Lord's declaration when he said he had built his church. That part of the declaration when he said the gates of hell will not prevail against it. How our folks have survived through all of the ages of the world. And they've done it by sacrifice, great sacrifice. And I thought in comparison, is anything wrong in our churches? Right now, in our churches, we're bothered with New Lightism, and Calvinism, and other isms that are in our work that are problems to us. And 500 years from now, if somebody was to judge us and find out all of the things that persist in our work, would they think that we were any different than these folks back there that they found some fault with? In these two factions, or several factions that developed. There were great, strong, and brilliant men, men of much integrity and learning. There were constantly debates and so on going on in the writings of the apostolic fathers and the church fathers are extant. If I may say it, I have on the shelf in my study the Anti-Nicaean Fathers. I have about 25 books, a set of the books of the writings of the church and post-church followers. Great men, and in their writings the things that had grown up into the churches. Some of them were of the established group and defending that. Some within our group and defending our position. Very, very interesting reading to find out what was going on. I think far more went on during the first two or three centuries than has in the last two or three, as far as the debate concern of the truth concerned. Then there came the first real division that came was in 251 A.D. The church in Rome had grown strong. Heresies had developed. There had been persecution by the Jews. Under the persecution of the Jews, the best information that I can get is 2,000 of our people were martyred. When Saul of Tarsus was converted and entered the ministry, persecution by the Jews waned. Then the persecution by the Roman government took place. During a period of 250 years, 10 Roman emperors persecuted our people. And during the wave of persecution, started with Nero and ended with Diocletian, these 10 emperors, let's try to make an application of it here this morning. If we knew when we met here, we were transgressing the law of the land, the penalty of which was death, how many of us would feel free to meet? In this age, many of them had the courage to meet and suffer martyrdom. But there were some who would recant their faith with a reservation. And I can imagine, I can kind of see them say, "Now, Lord, you know I love you. But if I don't deny you, they're going to kill me. And outwardly, I'm going to deny you, but in my heart, I'm not going to deny you, but I'm going to save my life by denying you." That wave of persecution, at the end, they'd want to come back. There grew up into the church two factions over that thing. One element wanted to take them back. One element said when they denied the Lord to save their lives, so many martyred, they were unworthy to be taken back. And that thing was in the church at Rome at the time the church split. Great man named Fabian. I tried to find the history of his life and found quite a little bit of information on him. Fabian died. There were two men in the church that vied with one another for the pastors of the church. One of them was named Cornelius. The other one was named Novatian. And in the settlement, Cornelius was in favor of the established opinion and wanted to deal more leniently with sin than Novatian. Vote in the church was taken. Cornelius received a majority of votes. Novatian and his group withdrew and constituted themselves into a church. Now the question is, Since the government of our churches is democratic, and the majority of that church elected Cornelius, and Novation and his group pulled out and organized the church, was it scriptural? Here's my position. In a church, there's only one candlestick, and the candlestick holds the truth. And even though the minority has the candlestick and the truth, and the majority is in error, I believe the candlestick is with the minority. And in that division, I think it went with Novation. By that time, there were churches all over Asia Minor, around the shores of the Mediterranean Sea in Africa, and as far away as Babylon and India, all over. Like this trouble we had in our association. The association divided, got into the local churches divided. There were two different factions. The churches all over the land divided. Some of them stayed with the establishment. Some of them were in sympathy with Novation. And that division lasted until now. We trace our lineage through the group that stayed with Novation. The other group grew further and further in error into the episcopacy. Later on into the papacy. The papacy was not fully established until 606. Boniface III was at the head of the religious establishment, and Procopius wanted to be emperor of Rome. They had a conference and an agreement. Boniface would throw the influence of the church to him to be chosen as emperor of Rome if, and when he were chosen emperor, he would officially designate him as the pope. So officially, Boniface III was the first pope in 606. And that's the same year that the Mohammedan religion became established through the work of Mohammed. Our people were called Novations. And they had Sabellianism and all sorts of heresies. And I want to now, I'm going to have to hurry. I want to come now to Constantine. In 50 B.C., the Roman Empire conquered the British Isles. It was inhabited by the Saxons. Their religion was Druidism. And in they didn't completely take the British Isles, but they sent many, many soldiers from Rome into the British Isles. Well, we have the story of the conversion of Claudia and Pudin, and I studied that. I have a lot of history of Wales and England, and I learned this. Many of the women in England and Wales were carried into Rome and other cities as housemaids and servants. Many of the men were carried into the European area of the Roman Empire as servants, and many of them in the Roman army. There was a Welshman named Caractus, who evidently was the father of Claudia. Caractus was also converted under the preaching of Paul in Rome, and Claudia and Pudin, they carried the gospel to Wales. It grew and flourished there through many years. And the last of the persecutions under Diocletian sought definitely to wipe them out in England and Wales. And they had a good success at it by the number of martyrs that they had. But hurrying along, when the division came in the church at Rome, when one from the, I'll call it the establishment and the Novatians and the Petrobrusians and what have you, the Paternines and all of these names, like when one comes to us from another denomination, we baptize them. The worst thing in the world you can do for a church is to deny its baptism. That's the reason we are hated like we are. We don't take anybody else's baptism. And when one would come from the regular establishment to our people, they'd rebaptize them. And that's where they got the name Anabaptist. Well, Constantine was born in the end of the, late in the 3rd century in England, in Wales. His father was a Roman soldier, and his mother was a Welsh Christian. And soon, when Constantine was 3 or 4 years old, he was moved back to Rome with his father and family, grew up and became prominent there. When he became emperor of the empire, and espoused the Christian religion, he took it rather seriously, but he believed in baptismal regeneration. And though he professed to be a Christian, since baptism would wash away sins, he wouldn't have baptism, but he thought he was going to die, so all of his sins would be washed away. He's a very brilliant man, and the divisions and the animosities between the peoples in the religious establishment. In the year 325, he called the Ecumenical Council in Nicaea in Bithynia. In that council, there were 318 preachers, and only one of them was one of our group. The others were all from the establishment. They met there at the king's invitation, at the king's expense, and were quartered there for some months. And all of the differences between the different groups were debated, trying to come to certain conclusions with reference to what this one taught and that one taught, and harmonize it. There was one Baptist preacher there, his name was Acesius. He sat through the whole council. During that council, they issued a number of decrees. During that council, the church was married to the state. And the decrees that were issued by that council had the support of the armed might of Rome to enforce those decrees. One of the decrees was that no city, no district could have but one preacher. Well, that ruled us out. Because the established church would furnish the preacher. And that placed our people in opposition to the establishment. That angered our people in a sense. And they exercised their faith and they carried on and opposition. In 412, there was a decree issued by the powers that be that anyone who went from their group to our group for baptism would be killed. Not only would they kill the one that was baptized, but they kill the fellow that baptized them. That was a decree in 412. Well, I wondered about how many I'd baptized if they government had a representative there and going to apprehend me, and when they got through with it, take me up and kill me and whoever I baptized. That caused one of the greatest migrations in all history. When our people were forced to flee, you talk about Hannibal crossing the Alps, but a lot of our people crossed over into the mountainous recesses of northern Italy and southern France, what's called the Piedmont Valleys. During this time, they were called Paternines. Our people were. They were called Petrobrusians. They were called Henricans. They had been called Paulicans. They were called Lollards. They were called Lionites. They were called Waldensians. And I'll speak about them a little bit. The book, The Valleys and Churches in the Valleys of Piedmont, by Moreland. In my study of church history, I've seen that book referred to numerous occasions. I wondered how in the world I'd ever get a hold of that. At that time, I had a connection with the old book exchanges in America. I'd order a book from Smallridge Bookshop in Dallas, Texas. I've ordered books from him and have them sent to me from Connecticut. They were on a chain, and each one had a catalog of what was in their stock. If one didn't have it, he had the catalog. If another one had it, he'd have them send and fill the order. I couldn't find that book in America. I wanted that book, and I wanted Ecclesiastical Researches. So one day in the message, I said, I'll give anybody $10 if they'll furnish me the address where I can find either of these books. About 2 months went by. Car drove up and stopped in my front. Came in a lady. She had a book. Said, give me the price of this book and $10. You said you'd give anybody $10 to find this. She had Ecclesiastical Researches. That is Mrs. Horace Ashcraft. You know her, J.B. She went to work and found the address of this other book, The Churches in the Valley of the Piedmont, Brown's Incorporated in London. I went to the local bank, had them through the Chase National Bank in New York to buy that book for me. They bought it and sent it to the bank at home, and I paid the bank for it. I paid $31.06 for the original, and I furnished that book for this republication. And once when I was pastor, I was teaching a men's Bible class. Big church, and I guess there's 25-30 men in the class. So I had one of the brethren to bring to that class Pendleton's Manual. And I brought the book on the Valley of Churches in the Valley of the Piedmont. And in their confession of faith in 1120, taking up the different things that is carried in the confessions, I would ask the brother that had the manual to read what they had about the scriptures. I'd read what they believed about it. And we made a comparison of the two. While we weren't agreed on everything, as we're not agreed on everything, it was agreed by the men in that class, and they were staunch Baptists, that we could belong to that Waldensian church and believe what they believed. There never has been any such persecutions as our folks endured. The invention of the Spanish Inquisition, with all of the ingenuity of the devil in inventing and producing instruments of torture, they did it. When the persecutions by the Roman emperors ceased in the early 4th century, it's time Constantine came to the throne of Rome in 311, and then after the council in 325. So far as I know, not many of our folk were martyred in that period. But in 83 years after the council in Nicaea, the established church then began to kill our people. And that went on for 1,000 years. And during that period of time, the historians say that no fewer than 50 million of our people were killed. And they were all killed by religionists in the name of religion. I don't know how you feel, I know how I feel. I look on Roman Catholicism, and I have no more regard for Roman Catholicism as a religion and truth than I have for Russian communism. None. Roman Catholicism has slain more of our people than all others combined. And the marvel of it all is the way our people stood up under it. Brethren, we have a heritage of a people that, as Brother Powers described the devotion of a preacher, that is astounding. I wondered what I would do if I'd have the grace to face the torturous death that millions of our people have faced with courage or not. Maybe the time comes God gives us the grace that we need and we don't have it when we don't need it. But I wonder if I would shrink from it. Constantine took the dragon off the banner of Rome and put the cross on it. When Roman Catholicism became through the years so intensely corrupt, its own voters begun to rebel against it. There begun what might be called a reformation. Do any of you have the book, The Crusade Against the People, Our People in Europe, organized especially to crucify and persecute them, the Albigensians? If you don't have that book, get it. It's astounding what our folks endured under organized military force and armed might of the Roman establishment that wiped out complete villages and communities of men, women, and children in the crusade against our people when they were called Albigensians. It's pitiful. And I'll have just a few words and close this morning directly. Suffice it to say, the Lord had said, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Through all of these trials, somewhere, under some condition, maybe the men in a cave at night, in order to preserve their lives, but we have had people who stood true. There has been an unbroken chain of our people, not by name, but by doctrine, by practice, from the days of the apostles and the Lord until now. And we have a heritage. And I wonder if future generations, if the Lord delays His coming, will look back on our generation with any degree of appreciation comparable to what we may have for those who have lived ahead of us. First of the outspoken reformers against Rome was an Italian. His name was Savonarola. He had been saved by the grace of God, and he was familiar with the practices of his church in Romanism. He was a very eloquent man, and he spoke out against it. Not too much said about him in history, but his faith ended by being burned at a stake in Milan, Italy. Then followed him in the Reformation, the two great reformers, John Calvin in France and Martin Luther in Germany. And it's a pity that these reformers did not even countenance our people. They each had been trained for the priesthood in the Catholic Church. I've had access to literature that tells about the conversion of each one of them. I really believe they both had been saved. They spoke out against it with great rebellion, and I won't have time to go into that much. So tomorrow morning, 10 minutes, Brother Keeling, I'm going to quit. Tomorrow morning, I'll take up something of the Reformation under John Calvin in France and Martin Luther in Germany, how we got along with them. And then I plan to discuss our people in England and in America in the future lectures. Thank you.
You're still wired up. How often do you get to tell Brother Glover what to do, not to move? I would like for Brother Glover, Brother Powers, Brother Bean, Brother Eisenhower, Brother Williams isn't here. This service today concludes the portion of our Northwest Baptist Institute lecture series. Tonight, we'll begin the state quarterly fellowship meeting. Type of services and so forth will be the same. Brother Glover will be our speaker, both tonight and in the morning, as well as Brother Campbell and Brother Powers tomorrow. But services tonight and tomorrow are our quarterly fellowship meeting. I would like these men that have spoken for us in this series of lectures for our Bible conference to stand here and receive a hand of appreciation from our missionary in Lapine, Brother French. You come and extend on our behalf, church and the school. He's a member of this church. He's a faculty member of our school, and the combination of the school and church have hosted this week. Brother Glover, Eisenhower, Brother Bean, I wish Brother Williams were still here so he might receive this.
All of you at this time, set shoulders to one another. I want to get a picture. As we start doing that this morning. Oh.
We are going to have lunch again today, as we did yesterday. A few announcements and a little sales pitch before we do. The bookstore today will be open from 5 to 7 o'clock this afternoon for your convenience. We will be having several coming early tonight, be arriving here, and we will have the bookstore open at 5 o'clock. We have just received, and it was delivered even as today, so these are fresh off the press. As a matter of fact, the publisher brought them here himself. Not the publisher, but the printer. The printer brought these himself today. This is a two-volume set of the Baptist Annals of Oregon from 18.